I'm already fired up to get back here and, you know, playing with a certain edge and that chip. There's a burning fire in my belly right now, and he just threw some more gas on it. So thanks, John.
John Bowman, right?
John Bowman, yeah, thank you.
You are now listening to The Waggle, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
That's right, it is the Waggle Podcast, and if you're watching this, you know that I'm Donovan Bennett, he is David Sanchez. We are filming it in glorious 4K, in living color, but we're going to be talking about some real drama this week, Davis.
Drama for somebody's mama?
Not specifically,
Oh, and the game drama.
More like beef. Like, what's beef?
Okay.
Beef is when I see you. It's guaranteed to be in.
I see you.
That is correct. That is correct. But what is sponsorship? Because this podcast is brought to you by our friends at Sport Clips. They're fans of this podcast, just like you are. And each and every week, they help us out. They are known for their Sport Clips MVP haircut experience with massaging shampoos, hot steam towels, sports on TV, football. Like, you got some hockey, some baseball, some basketball, but we only care about the football and the legendary haircuts. You can book your appointment online at sportclips.ca. That is sportclips.ca. Also on the line, we are going to have John Liu coming up for you. Stick around for that, because Montreal has been playing really, really well. But let's be honest, we want to talk to him about the drama that went down that he started. He's a little CFL TMZ. The drama I am referencing is Andrew Harris v. John Bowman, John Bowman v. Andrew Harris. Here's how it started. Harris coming back from his PED suspension. John Bowman thinking maybe he's coming back a little too early, and he said this.
If it's up to me, you get suspended longer. But that's the way the CFL and the Drug Enforcement Agency did it. So whatever he's got to say, no excuses. Because if I know it was anybody else, everybody would be piling on him. So just because he's one of Canada's favorite sons, we're not going to take it easy on him either.
And John Liu, naturally, as a good reporter, what did he do? He took those quotes and he ran straight to Andrew Harris because he had some time with him before the CFL broadcast. He allowed Andrew Harris to speak on it, but best believe he already heard them. And here's how that exchange went.
It's gas to a fire right now. I mean, I'm already fired up to get back here and, you know, playing with a certain edge and that chip. There's a burning fire in my belly right now, and he just threw some more gas on it. So thanks, John.
John Bowman, right?
John Bowman, yeah, thank you.
So where do we side here if we had to choose a side? Is John Bowman, who's part of the PA, speaking a little out of pocket about how long the suspension should be? Or is there some credence to his argument? And is he allowed to vocalize his opinion? And should Andrew Harris not be in his feelings about it?
Andrew just wants it to go away.
Mm.
And John bringing light to it, as you saw on the broadcast, it was talked about pregame. It was talked about during the game. It was talked about at halftime. It was talked about on SportsCenter.
We're still talking about
it. We're still talking about it. So I think from Andrew's side, it's something that he's disappointed in, because he's having a monster year, and it's something that's probably going to taint his legacy, right or wrong. He wanted to go away, and by John doing that, it just put it right in the center of everything. So that's, I think, why he's so disappointed with it.
So I agree with Andrew Harris's sentiment that, listen, if you wanted these penalties to be longer, you're part of the PA, you're part of the leadership. You could have fought for that if you really want to. Why are you bringing up now? I don't control what the suspensions are. I'm back. I'm ready to play. But in the name of shutting it down, shutting it down, I feel like Harris should have taken the high road for all the reasons that you mentioned. And because one of his quotes that he said to John piqued my interest. My ears went up a little bit when he said, you know, he's putting gas on the fire. He's fueling me, so keep talking, John. And John Liu was like, which John? Not me. We're all good. Is it J-O-H-N or J-O-N? Who are you talking to? Wait a minute. You can't go higher than 100%. Like, when people are like, oh, I gave 110%. No, that's like mathematically impossible. And so if I'm a Blue Bombers fan, Blue Bombers teammate, I'm like, well, wait. John Bowman is airing you out, and now you're more motivated? You haven't been playing for a couple of weeks. You're our best player. Like, we're without our starting QB. That's impossible. You shouldn't be able to get more motivated on what a next man says. So I didn't like that part of it. And then in the post game, he could have let it live, but he was asked about John Bowman, and here's what he said.
Did he play today? I don't think he made a play. Other than that last one. Good job, John. I'm honestly over that already, man. I'm not even going to talk about it anymore. So, I mean, at this point, I'm just, you know, it was good to be out here today. And the loss was unfortunate.
And listen, I love the cheekiness, the little subtle dig. But you're showing that he's bothering you with the sarcasm. And more importantly, you lost the game.
Okay.
So you don't have the moral high ground to ask if he played. Because yeah, the play that he made was really big. And even though you played a better game, your team lost. So if you want it to go away,
right,
don't speak on it. We seem to love to quote Jay-Z. You're doing it on TV. So I'll do it now. Beef up. Don't beef down. You're the better player in this part of your career. So let John Bowman talk, and it's a one-day story. You talk, it's a week-long story. So don't give some of your platform to something that you don't want to talk about.
Don't do, basically to what you're saying, putting gas on the fire.
That's what he's doing.
He's putting gas on his own fire by talking about it. So this, here's, to that point, he should, if Andrew wants it to go away, the best thing for Andrew to do is not talk about it, right? Okay, fine. The next question I have, and here's I think the most interesting dynamic of it all. Where are the loyalties from John to Andrew, and should there be any? He said, Andrew came out and said, we had drinks at Grey Cup, basically saying they're friends. So is John wrong for someone he thought Andrew is supposed to be a friend of his or a colleague of his for airing out his business like this? Like that would be the thing for me. Is John out of line for doing that to someone that Andrew considers his friend?
Yeah. So there's a brotherhood amongst you players, and John, I feel, was saying, "Man, I'm in my 30s, late 30s, and I've been theoretically doing it clean all these years. So I'm taking it personal when someone else is taking some shortcuts to getting their success." The flip side of that, and we've seen this with other players, is you have to keep it 100. So if you're going to talk tough about another player as part of that brotherhood, what happens when it happens in your own locker room, right? Because let's not act like there isn't someone who's pushing the envelope on every team. So
Exhibit A? You have the Exhibit A on that?
Well, we've seen it this year.
Okay, that's where you're going.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Yeah. Jeff Heck makes the comment about the Red Blacks long snapper who got caught for PED. Fast forward 3 weeks later or a month later, his own teammate happens to. So, yes, that's – but, see, for Jeff Heck, it's different if it happens to him. He doesn't care if it happened to Andrew Harris. He didn't – people went after Jeff Heck. As soon as that happened, everyone said, oh, now what? He didn't even respond. It's not bothering him. It's Andrew that's getting all the – who cares if – so that's – I mean –
But you're right. But it seems hypocritical, because if you're going to jump on social media, which was the case then, or jump in front of live mics in a scrum, which is the case now, and say all that, are you going to keep that same energy if it happens in your same locker room? And the point is, in this league, the locker rooms are fluid. You could end up being teammates with Andrew Harris in the future. You don't know. I suspect that these guys are going to run into each other at Grey Cup again. Now,
CFL's a small league, and they do all the league partners. Those guys are the player representatives for their team. They're gonna run into each other quite often.
They're both probably hoping that it's on the field, because then they don't have to talk throughout the week. But otherwise, they're going to force to interact. So
it's funny because they're both teammates of mine. I play with both of them, and so I know them both very well.
Both good dudes.
Yeah, and so it's gonna be funny. Andrew's not really one to want to – I don't think either of them, actually, to be honest. Neither one of those guys are – either one is going to reach out the other one and want to buddy it up. They both probably could care less and to try to make it right. And I guess to Andrew's point, John might want to. I think for Andrew's point, it will never – I don't think Andrew could ever look back and be cool with it, because that brought a lot of negative attention to something. I mean, I always think of it like this. Andrew's got a young daughter. He's got family. He's from that city. He's done a great job from a kid, and there's the story that TSN did a great story on Andrew and his upbringing. He had a tough, you know, he had a tough upbringing, and he's done a great job of you know, turned out to be a good young man, or a good man now, and a good father and a husband and a leader in the community. And for all that to be, it's never going to be taken away, but there's always going to be that comment that goes along with his name now. And that it hurts me, because that's unfair, and that would suck. And we all make mistakes, and especially if it was accidental, which we'll never know the truth of that. But if it was, imagine that. If it's, you know, a supplement he took and it was an accident, and now all the good work he's put in, all the hard work he's done, to have that tied to him for the rest of his career and his legacy, that's a tough pill to swallow.
And so that brings me to my next question, because, you know, there's been talk coming out of Winnipeg, well, you know, well, we were the B sample, we're sending it to labs, we want it tested, we want to do some investigation in terms of cross-contamination and where this supplement came from, and was there an issue in the lab, right? Really trying to do some deep dive W5 type of research to exonerate yourself and clear your name, but that also flies in the face of what you started, which was, man, like, if you want the story to end, we'll just end the story. And so does it make sense for him just to say, I'm just going to take this L, and I know in my heart the truth, and I'm going to let it live? Or should he use every recourse to try and investigate to clear his name? Because even if he does, there's going to be some people who don't care, don't pay attention, right? Like, the correction in the newspaper is always in small print, not like the headline when the story came out, which was in bold and on the front page. Is it worth it for him to try and exonerate himself?
It's not worth it, because this is a private inquiry that he's doing. The CFL has nothing to do with it. So the fact that he's going on his own trying to get exonerate himself, he's not going to, because even whatever he comes back with is,
can't get those games back.
And also who's verifying the legitimacy of it? Right. It's coming from his camp. It's never going to make a difference.
I mean, if he knows in his heart of hearts that he didn't,
yeah.
Then to me, that I if I'm him, I can sleep good at night. Before we get to our next guest, let me talk to you about Cal Tire. Tires and tickets, that's a winning combo. And until October 26th, score a free pair of CFL regular season tickets when you buy a set of four BF Goodrich tires at Kyle Tire. Tickets are valid for any city and can be used in either 2019 or 2020. Check out caltire.com/CFL tickets. That's caltire.com/CFL tickets for all of the details, because Cal Tire is proud to be the official tire retailer of the CFL in partnership with BF Goodrich, the official tire of the CFL. And now on the podcast, we've got the official deep threat of the Waggle podcast. I feel like more respect needs to be put on his name. It's not just being a deep threat, but being a well-rounded receiver. He's been a true number one this year, and he's coming up, since we're talking Owls. Devere Posey is next on the Waggle.
And our next guest on the Waggle podcast is not just a deep threat for the Montreal Alouettes. My guy's making big plays over the middle, big plays in the clutch. Devere Posey, thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, no problem, man. Thanks for having me.
First of all, how are you enjoying Montreal? Because you have basically done the tour of the best cities for me in Canada. You start in Toronto, then you go out west to Van, now you're in Montreal. Basically, you have been the guy who said, great nightlife, great food, great city. I want to play in all the best spots in Toronto, Vancouver, and Montreal. How has this been, your tour of Canada?
Oh, man, it's been kind of by luck and by chance. Toronto had my rights coming up here, so I had to negotiate with them first. And it was a great city, so it was an easy choice, and, you know, things ended the way there, and, you know, Vancouver was a, you know, me and Sean Lemon are really close, and, you know, Ed Hervey, you know, he's a great guy, and, you know, we had, you know, had ties back last year, and you know, Montreal kind of came about. I didn't know much about the city. I haven't played. I only played here once, you know, prior to signing here, so I don't know. I mean, I spoke with BJ Cunningham, and honestly, me and Kahari had a big talk, you know, early in the free agency process that, you know, as soon as it was able to start, you know, we kind of connected, and I kind of saw what he was saying, and, you know, and Kavis, you know, recruited me hard and took care of all the things there, and, you know, Montreal is a good place, you know, in the summertime, it's unmatched. I've heard about the winter, so I can't speak on winter, but the city is great, man. My wife loves it, and my sons love it, and we're enjoying it.
Listen, winter sucks no matter where you are in Canada. So don't worry about that. But you mentioned Kahari. At the time, you didn't know he was going to be the head coach. You just thought he was going to be leading the offense. What did you see or hear from him that got you excited to play for him?
I don't know. He said he had kind of did his research, and he kind of knew the things that I did well and how I could fit in his system. He asked me if I could, you know, play well with other great receivers. And I said, of course. I mean, I've been doing it my whole career, you know, playing with guys like SJ and Brian Burnham and, you know, a long list of guys. But, you know, I was able to kind of just see get a look on the inside of what he was thinking and how he outlooked, you know, for the year. He knew he was going to have a quarterback competition. You know, he knew that was going to be a hurdle. He knew that we were going to have to gel as a new unit. And he kind of knew that Stanback was going to have a big year. So, I mean, all the things he said and all the things he mentioned about moving me around and kind of highlighting me on second down and stuff like that and trying to come to me in big moments. Because, I mean, I think that's something I do well and something I take pride in, you know, playing in games like that and making those plays. And, you know, the guys around me are, you know, on that same vibe too. So it's making it easier, you know, and Kahari was right.
Now, you did mention kind of him moving around, and you were perceived differently as a great receiver, but someone that was going to, you know, run the top off of the defense, really stretch the field because you were with guys like SJ and Burnham. But now when you come to Montreal, people now look at you as the number one, the guy who's going to dictate coverage, the guy who's going to take on the best defensive back on the opposition. Do you feel any different? Do you feel an added sense of responsibility?
Nah, I really don't. I kind of feel like that's kind of like that changes game to game. You know, it's, you know, schematically. I mean, of course, those titles and media headlines are what they are. But I mean, it's the CFL, and these coaches are smart, and they have game plans each week, and they're trying to take away certain things, and they scout you and points you didn't even know you were weak at, and you're finding out in the game. And you're like, dang. I mean, I look at the game that way, and. Honestly, what Winnipeg did, you know, what Saskatchewan did, you know, things are, we were able to move the ball, but it's always about, you know, those sideline meetings are very important in adjusting and things like that. But number one pressure, no, I don't feel that, man. I know I have a great running back to play with me. Vern is playing lights out. He does a great job of distributing the ball. I mean, I'm not just saying that. You can look at our numbers. They're very well evenly distributed. And it's not like one lopsided. We get it done as a unit for sure. And honestly, the one thing that I believe nobody's talking about is, you know, we had O-line. I don't know what went on in the O-line last year, but our O-line is playing, you know, with their hearts out. You know, they're playing lights out. And you know, things happen. We still get sacks, but, you know, they're playing and they're driving this team and they're pushing the ball downfield and they have a sense of attitude and something they want to prove too. So I wouldn't put it on me, Bennett. You know, it's crazy. You know, it's crazy you say that. I haven't even thought about it like that.
Well, I'll allow you to give your offensive line some love. This is an offensive line that not a lot of people rated coming into the year. And then you lost the guy to retirement in the middle of the year. What is it about this group that you are, you know, going to war with that makes them special?
Oh, man, guys, we understand each other. I mean, it's always makes for football. You know, always makes a good chemistry when guys, you know what's going on, you know, with each other on and off the field and can able to bring that same energy every day. I mean, the guys we got in our locker room, you know, on our coaching staff, I mean, we got a guy named, you know, Marquay McDaniels and, you know, and Coach Gordon, Coach Flesh, and, you know, Mark Coy brings a level of excellence, you know, in our room and what he demands. And to be honest, like, I mean, I'm embarrassed to say it, but like, he doesn't grade anybody higher than like a 75. So he's like, he's tough. So he has standards, you know, LBJ retired and, you know, he's, you know, helping out with Coach Dunn with O-line and he has standards and, you know, Kahari, you know, has standards for the quarterbacks because he played the position at a high level. So, I mean, it's working well, you know, right now, you know, inside of our locker room and inside of our meeting rooms and the way we prepare and just honestly, his understanding for players and, you know, the CFL schedule. I mean, he's a player, he's a coach, he's a player's coach, you know, as that's a term that we all use, understands, you know, what we need in practice, you know, the energy and you see him on the sideline. That stuff is real. You know, when he's jumping around, like he knows our music, he knows the stuff we like to hear and he just brings that energy. So it's working well, man. We're a nice little family. We're forming here. And I mean, to be honest, the only thing that's going bad is, you know, the way we start the games.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Big Clay VA, your quarterback. And for a long time, people would look at him and talk about what he can't do. You know, he's not tall, he's running first guy. But whether it's in Pasadena in high school or Eastern Washington or Oregon or now in the CFL with Montreal, all this dude does is win. What is it about him that when he is the starter, teams just happen to perform well?
The guy is playing the game, man. He's if you ask him, you know, I'm working to get better, you know, and that's what he always says. But, you know, just, you know, how things are going for him, man, I couldn't be happier. Just the way he entered the CFL, you know, I spoke with him. He kind of, you know, shed light on his story and really, you know, spoke on how, you know, he got, you know, Montreal gave him his first professional shot. And he's always felt indebted to the city because of that. And, you know, he's bounced around. He went to Saskatchewan, but, you know, there he played behind KG. And he was able to learn, you know, ways to win, you know, in this league. He was able to learn how to prepare. And he went to Hamilton and, you know, was there with June Jones and was able to witness that system and understand coverage and read things that way. You know, he was involved in the, you know, transaction with Johnny and all of that. So, you know, if you take a guy like that and you look at his past, who always has, you know, one stat that I'm always a fan of, he's always, you know, on the better side of the win column. You know, that's how I judge quarterbacks, you know, what's their winning percentage. And because they're the guys who get it done. You know, he's always on the better side of that. So you put someone like that, you know, in a city he feels indebted to, in a place where he, you know, got his first professional start. You know, he you gave him the keys to this Lamborghini. He's running, he's driving off right now. And, you know, and we're all along for the ride, man. We're enjoying. He's bringing the energy every day. I mean, he's a guy on the. He has the ox cord in the locker room. So, you know, he's the maestro right now. So we're following to his tunes and we're rocking out, man. And honestly, it's crazy. At the end of the game, he becomes a different dude. I don't know what it is, but he turns up and it all brings another energy. I get excited. You know, I'm that way. So we feed off of each other. You know, he laughs at me because, you know, we had a play earlier this year, like I jumped over the on a quarterback sneak, I jumped over and was trying to hit a linebacker. And he's like, why'd you do that? And I was like, man, I like to play the game with like a kid-like mentality, and it was so much fun to do that. And he's like, bro, I play like that too. So honestly, that's what you're witnessing, man. We're having fun, you know. And Chris Matthews, that was the first thing he said when he got here. He said, man, y'all look like y'all have fun. And honestly, he sets that tone, Kahari sets that tone and gives us the freedom to do that and be ourselves. And you know, personality is accepted, but production is demanded, and we live by that.
The most impressive thing you said in all of that, and it was beautiful, was that you gave this man the ox cord, because that's another level of respect when you allow a man in a football locker room to have the ox cord, because you're going to have different people with different backgrounds, and they want to hear something different. How is he as a DJ? Forget about him making calls at the line. I want to hear about the calls with the Bose speakers, because is he just a Spotify, Apple Music playlist guy, or is he coming with something curated for the crew?
No, he's coming. He's not coming prepared. He's coming back-to-back off the dome. And I'll be honest, you know, my guy Boris, he brings the international touch too, so those vibes get touched on too, because, you know, Montreal is a different city, and we have players from all over the world. So Boris helps out, you know, when we need a little change up and get the Caribbean vibes going, the Afro beats and all of that, and, you know, and the European stuff. So it's a nice mix, man. But to be honest, like, my favorite days are after the game when we're playing old school jams, because they tell me I'm the old guy now, and I can't believe it. But those are my favorite times when it gets on the, when we play the old school jams.
You're the old guy.
It's crazy. Well, like, these guys are telling me I'm old. Well, Bowman's still in there, but, like, I'm hanging out with those guys now. Like, it's crazy.
You're 29. You're not old. Don't let them
play. Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. But we do have a young core, and it's a nice mix of, you know, middle-aged guys. But, you know, they give us a hard time.
Before we end, I want you to speak on Bowman a little bit. He's been on some real good teams in that city. And, you know, he literally is old. Like, this will be potentially some of the last snaps of football that he plays riding out this year. You guys have been on a wave. What would it be like for you to kind of make this storybook run that everyone's watching and make things real interesting and give him a good send-off in November?
I mean, that means everything. I mean, you spend time in training camp and in the locker room, you know, when you're supposed to be going home, talking to guys, getting another story, understanding, you know, where they've been. And you hear someone like that, he has volumes of stories and how they, you know, took the cup into this place on St. Cat and all of these things. And he'll tell you so many stories, and he loves the game, and he loves being around it. And to send him off, man, you know, that way, it would be amazing, you know, just because it's something that he's experienced before. And to be honest, he brings that level. I mean, like, he brings that level of professionalism every single day, and just seeing how he handled things this summer with the PA and stuff like that, and getting ready for training camp. A lot of people can't do that and handle those things he's handled in the CFL over all these years. And, you know, it's amazing to watch and testament to the man he is and how he approaches the game and how much he respects the CFL and what Canada has done for him. So it'll be amazing to do that. But don't let it fool you. Like, he loves this stuff. Like, he's the first person in the locker room. Like, he needs to get there first to take Instagram pictures. I'm going to pair him up. I got to bust him up a little bit. Like, this guy won't let me even take his Instagram pictures because he has routines and stuff. Like, he's Mr. CFL himself. Don't get fooled.
So he's the Instagram thirsty guy on the team? Is that what you're saying?
He's not the Instagram thirsty guy, but he's very well calculated. It's planned in his schedule. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. All right. He's trying to be the full-on influencer on the squad. I got it. I mean, given his age, I'm surprised it's Instagram and not Facebook, but I do rate that he's putting filters on all his photos. I have to keep it real, though. I have to keep it 100 because I do love the vibe of everything that's going on in the city and with the team. But if I'm going to be honest, I didn't see this coming. I wasn't rating you guys going into the year. I saw all the turmoil with the front office and the coaching staff and people still talking about Manziel. And I was like, this is not a recipe for success. But you sent out a tweet. Can't lie, I love this 2019 team. Montreal Alouettes, blood, sweat, and tears only make us closer. It's real-life family ties over here, on and off the field. What is it about this group? Because you've been on a team that was real close, that was doubted, and won a chip in Toronto. What is it about this group that people like me, who doubted early on the outside, can't really see and get an appraisal of?
I think the fact that it was so cloudy, the fact that it was so dark and it was viewed so bad, you know, and it was just with the CFLPA this offseason, you really couldn't get connected and stuff like that. I don't know if people remember, but, you know, we made time in the offseason to get together during that time. We came to Montreal during the negotiations where no money was being handed out. You know, we sacrificed during our time as an offense, and we got up here and we ran routes. We stayed in an Airbnb. We ate on St. Cat, and we got to get to know each other. And we opened a group chat during that time, and we started that then. And for me, I think, I kind of get emotional about it because, you know, I think about, you know, why I came here and how, you know, when I made the decision that night, I was unsure, you know, once I said yes, just because it was a mountain to climb, you know, it was going to be tough, you know, but you kind of like, when you got to step out on faith and kind of like trust those things, trust your work ethic, you know, when you talk to other guys and they're speaking the same way and they have the same energy. I remember a conversation me and Matt Shields had, you know, in May, and he was like, man, you know, guys want that here. We want to win here. We believe we can win here. Like, you still got to show up to work and give it everything you have. And that team did that. And, you know, we switched things up this year. You know, we did training camp at McGill. Everybody was standing in the dorms. And we were able to kind of come together, you know, during the CFL. We had a long meeting. It really wasn't about the coaches. It wasn't about, you know, the organization or the team being sold or bought. So who cares? It's about these plays. It's about these 72 plays that each unit gets. Special teams gets 26. And what you're going to do with them. And every guy is on that same vibe. And every guy is down to ride. And every guy is down to give everything they have. And then including that, you know, that's the blood, sweat, and tears. And then off the field, we have fun. You know, we party there in F1. You know, we go eat. You know, we do Taco Tuesdays together. You know, we do pregame meals. We do brunch on game days. You know, it's love. You know, we Americans room with French guys room with American guys. You know, we get down that way, and it's reflecting on the field, and we're ready to fight for each other, and we know each other's stories and backgrounds and where we come from. So, I mean, you can't kind of foresee those things. Those are the intangibles. Those aren't on paper. So you probably couldn't see that coming. Nobody can see that coming, but we were building that, and that's the foundation we've been, you know, getting these wins on, you know, and that's who we are.
Preach.
No, you feel been, me?
I do. It's been fun to watch. And you guys do have some dogs on your team, whether it's VA or Bowman or Quan or Boris or Ciante Evans or Tommy Campbell or my boy Enoch or G. Lewis. Like, there are some solid dudes on that team. And you guys have been putting in work and putting it on tape for a while. So congratulations and keep it going, man.
Right, don't crown us yet, man. We still want to earn your trust, so we're still working here, you know, and we're a work in progress, so we're excited to go out to BC. It's going to be a good test. They're hot, so, but don't crown us yet, man. We got a lot of work to do.
You know what goes great with twisting up the volume on your favorite tune? Twisting up the party with a twisted tee. And DeVere Posey talked about the fact that the Al's locker room has been a party. Well, maybe they had some twisted tee up in there, because it's made with real tea and a touch of lemon. Twisted tea is the hard iced tea that goes down easy. So whether it's game day, beach day, or just the end of a work day, the good times start with a twisted tee. Twisted tea, good times with a twist. There have been some down times covering the Montreal Alouettes. This is not one of them. They're the best story for me in the league. So, Davis, let's talk to John Liu about the vibes in Montreal. Thank you so much for joining us, John. And first and foremost, we need to go through your recollection of the war of words between Andrew Harris and John Bowman, because you literally got the sound from both of them. You talked to John Bowman at the stadium, and then talked to Andrew Harris privately and getting ready for the game. Were you surprised that they both were so forthcoming in their difference of opinion?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And you know what? Actually, it was RDS Didier Ormajoust that got the question or the sound from John Bowman following the walkthrough on Friday afternoon. Because we do sit down interviews at the same time, so it's not possible for us to be on the field and in our production setup at the same time. So I didn't actually find out about John Bowman's comments until a little bit before Winnipeg, before the Bombers landed in Montreal. And so at that point, it was like, oh, wow. It's like, I know, I mean, I'm used to John being very candid, very honest, very unfiltered at times, which we really appreciate him for in the media, certainly. But these were such forceful comments that I really was surprised. And so when Andrew Harris was in the chair in front of us, of course, you know, I had to ask him, had he seen, read, or heard the comments from John Bowman? And he had, so he came back with a very pointed comments of his own. And following the game, I asked him, was there any interaction between him and John on the field during the course of play? And that's when he gave us the quote that he did post-game as well. So clearly, these two gentlemen are not on each other's Christmas card lists, that's for sure. It was interesting because Andrew told us that he and John had a beer at Grey Cup last year, you know, sat down and just shot the breeze and just enjoyed each other's company. But, yeah, I can't imagine that their relationship would be all that healthy moving forward, however many years John will be in the league. Andrew, I'm sure, will be around for a good many years. But, yeah, those were really surprising, but certainly eye-opening and, well, make your ears prick up types of clips that surrounded the whole Andrew Harris affair.
I love that when Andrew punctuated his response with, "Thanks, John," you clarified. I'm like, wait a minute, which John are you referring to? Bowman or me? Because it's not me. I'm just the messenger. Don't shoot me.
Actually, yeah, that's funny that you mentioned that, Davis, because when we were sitting Andrew down, he said that. He says, "Thanks, John." And I paused because I wasn't sure if he was, like, being a little bit maybe sarcastic with me, that, oh, thanks for alerting me to that. But then I realized that he was referring to John Bowman. And same thing post-game. He said it again, "Thanks, John," or "Good job, John." And I was like, okay, I'm sure this time he was referring to John Bowman for certain. But, yeah, there was a little bit of confusion that I find kind of amusing looking at it in retrospect. But, yeah, I'm glad you noticed that because it was a moment, or two moments, actually. But, again, it was, one of those instances where the players are so driven by emotion. Well, I mean, Andrew's case, it was immediately after a tough loss, one that the Bombers believe that they never should have been in that position. And then, you know, with everything that had transpired in the days up leading up to that, you can understand why he would be a little bit ticked off at the time that we scrummed them post-game.
Knowing John Bowman, did you think that this was calculated, that he came into the interviews wanting to get that message out?
I'm not really certain, just because why would you want to fire up a guy who is league MVP material? You know what I mean?
Right.
Why would you want to give him that bulletin board material? Why light more of a fire under him? And Andrew said, you know, that's more gas on the fire. And so I guess it's just that, you know what, John, he is just so forceful in his convictions. And I read all the clips, heard the clips that he gave to RDS and Canadian Press, that he said for 14 years he's been a clean athlete. And so I guess the issue of PEDs, whether you believe that Andrew Harris inadvertently took a banned substance or not, John clearly feels very strongly about that. And so I guess he just felt like he needed to say what he did. And consequences be damned if Andrew Harris went off on the bar or on the Alouettes as a result of that. But having looking at his numbers, I forget the exact rushing yards, but he caught over 100 passing yards. And so that was a pretty typical Andrew Harris game to begin with, wasn't it? So.
Yeah, it seemed like his teammates were motivated as well. But it's John, take us through the sideline. You work the sideline for TSN. You're in between the two benches. That's both teams on the same sideline there in Montreal. Was there anything extracurricular that you noticed any different than usual between the two benches, jawing back and forth between plays that us as an audience might not see this week? Last week?
Yeah, there were two instances, Davis. And the first one I'll mention, because it involved players on both sides of the, or on both teams, that probably would have been caught by the broadcast cameras. But it was immediately following the Vernon Adams pick, where he and Adam Big Hill got tangled up. And the play was so close to, the play concluded so close to the Montreal sidelines that players were congregating there. And, I believe it was Spencer and Jefferson that were going at each other verbally, really, really intensely. And it was just back and forth where their teammates had to restrain them, their respective players. And
So, yeah, I mean, the fact that Vernon got suspended for that, stripping the helmet and then trying to, depending on what angle you're looking at the video replay, what appeared to be trying to hit Adam Vigil with his own helmet. That roiled up a lot of emotions, a lot of bad blood, and it just carried over onto the sidelines. And so I saw that taking place, but there was a really interesting moment a little bit earlier in the second half, and that was, it was a running play. The Alouettes were going, toward the east end of the stadium, so that would be third quarter. And William Standback received a handoff going straight up the gut. And I heard a whistle as soon as he received the ball. And then he got tackled and the whistle blew. And so I said, wait a sec, you know, where'd that whistle come from? It's like, it had to have come from the crowd because it clearly wasn't an official. And it looked like if the initial whistle, as soon as Standback started his run, might have thrown him and or the offensive line off, because immediately following that, when the sequence ended, because I believe it was a two and out, Tony Washington was at the sidelines right by the bench, and he was looking up into the crowd in the direction of the stands where a lot of Blue Bombers fans were gathering, or they were situated behind the Bombers bench. And he was just hollering and cursing at them. It's like, you. And I wasn't quite sure what it was. And then, when we spoke to a couple of people, other bystanders on the sidelines, we realized that it was over that whistle that was blown in the course of play. And then when I read Herb Zerkowski's rap about the game, the tackle that Tommy Campbell tried to make on Andrew Harris on that 74-yard wildcard play with Darvin Adams, where Campbell got a hand on his jersey, spun him around, but really didn't look like he was putting 100% into the tackle. Well, when he spoke to Herb after the game, he said that he heard a whistle too. So that was two instances where Alouettes players were probably or definitely thrown off by whistles being blown in the stand. So, I mean, you got to figure those were Bomber fans. Like, why would an Alouettes fan do that to his own team? And so, that was when Tony Washington was just furious. I've never seen him going off like that. And so, I mean, there were a lot of really intense emotions flying around the stadium, on the field, on the sidelines, and even filtering up towards the stands. And so it was really a pretty incredible afternoon when you factor in the comeback that the Alouettes were able to mount. And so it was one of the more memorable games I can recall. And, I mean, you know what, Davis, I haven't seen a game like that where the crowd was so into it since probably around the time since you were playing, you know, toward the conclusion of your career. And the Alouettes were, 2008, 2009, 2010, when Mark Trestman was at the helm and Anthony Calvillo was leading the team to Grey Cup appearances and wins, where the crowd was, you know, was a full building and really great atmosphere. And so the buzz was back last Saturday for sure.
It's probably the best team they've had since that era. The buzz is certainly back, but the drama is still around this team in the form of suspension for Vernon Adams, because one of those situations that you described had him swinging a helmet of Adam Big Hill. You're going to cover the team now. Another obstacle for them to overcome this year. What is the prognosis of them going forward, missing, you know, one of the hottest QBs in the league for their next game?
That's a tough one, because when I look to the quarterback play when Vernon Adams was out for a couple of games with a concussion, neither Antonio Pipkin nor Matthew Schultz were really able to move the offense with any sort of consistency. And the second game, of course, was the lightning-shortened one against Saskatchewan. And so I think it's going to be tough sledding. I think that if it was earlier in the season, the Alouettes might have a little bit more of a chance, just because BC was really, really floundering. But having said that, the Lions their offense seemed to have found a little bit of a groove, you know, winning or at least playing competitive ball. And so I have a feeling that this game is going to be very close or extremely difficult for the Alouettes to win with Adams out of the lineup. And so I think this game is really going to come down to the Alouettes defense playing really solid ball, maybe coming up with a key turnover or even a scorer. But having said that, this is a team that we've seen week in, week out, that regardless of who's in the lineup, they don't quit. That's become their hallmark. It's a battling team. They are playing for Kahari Jones. They are playing inspired football. They're getting key performances at key times. Like, they may not be the most consistent through 60 minutes every game that they play, but they seem to rise to the occasion when they face adversity. And so I wouldn't rule them out for Saturday, but it'll be a little tougher sledding than they would have had their number one quarterback been available for this game.
Of all the TSN sideline reporters, who's got the best hands?
The best hair?
The best hands of all the TSN sideline reporters. We've seen you make nice grabs. We've seen Shinetti make some nice grabs. I think Orleski probably can make a nice grab, too. Who's got the best set of hands, John?
Well, let's start with hands, Davis. Prior to that crazy game, Al Saskatchewan, just before the rain came in at halftime, I would say before that game, Shinetti, because he's the only reporter I've seen actually make a catch on the sidelines, by default, he would have to be the one with the best hands. Okay?
Okay.
But after the game, Al Saskatchewan, in mid-August, the ball that came out of the stands toward me, I will say that, and I don't like to brag, but that was a one-handed catch. I was holding the microphone in my other hand because I was waiting for Kahari to come out of the dressing room so we could do a sideline interview after halftime. So I one-handed it. I heard Vernon Adams on the radio a couple of weeks later because he was talking to a couple of guys on the TSN 690 football show, and he described the catch as OBJ-like. And so I have to say, because he said it was, because a pro quarterback was impressed by it, and it was a one-handed catch, I have to say that I have the best hands. I would love to have a little CFL sideline reporter challenge.
Okay. Let's see if we can put something together here.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the thing is, Davis, we can't have a DB trying to drill us in the ribs there when we're reaching up full extension to try to make the grab. So you can't participate unless you're going to be making a catch.
Donovan's thinking we pull out the jugs machine at Grey Cup. So that's what we're going to think about. Now, as of right now, we're going to say John Liu is the Eastern Division's most outstanding offensive reporter, and we're going with Orleski. Orleski is the most outstanding offensive reporter in the West. She just nudged out Farhan Lalji. We're going to try to line that up at Grey Cup, John, but thank you for hopping on with us, breaking that down, the biggest story of this week in the league, and one that's not going to die anytime soon. We're happy that the Owls are back and relevant, and you've got to be loving that, being such a big part of that, John. Thanks for joining us, John Liu. Hey, DJ, can you agree there's nothing like watching a football game live with the group of friends, the crowd roaring in the background, the stands rumbling beneath your feet? It's a different experience than a living room. A living room just can't compare with that.
I know what you're saying. It's all about being in the stadium and surrounded by fans. If you, our listeners, haven't experienced a live game in stadium, or if you're looking to experience it again, you should definitely enter the Tackle Knee Pain Contest. You could win the grand prize of 4 tickets to a regular season CFL game. That's 300 towards team gear as well, plus a bill, $100 just for food.
Oh, that's a bonus. That's a bonus, a ticket. That covers basically your whole day except travel.
To learn more, enter and visit kneepainrelief.ca/CFL. That's kneepainrelief.ca/CFL. The contest is open from August 26th until September 30th, 2019, and there's no purchase necessary.
If you don't win the grand prize, DJ, there are 2 secondary prizes of $200 gift cards that you can use at your team's home shop.
So make sure you get it in before September 30th. So, Davis, love the perspective of John Liu, who's right there in the Montreal, could see the emotions on both sides. It was an emotional game because it was a one-sided game for a while. The storyline that you took away from it after watching it, VA all day with big plays, leading another comeback for Montreal, and the love-in from the city and the people in the stands, or Winnipeg again coming east and blowing a fourth quarter lead. They did it earlier in the season at BMO Field in Toronto. Now they did it at Percival Mosin against Montreal. What's the takeaway for you? Is it a game one or a game loss?
It's a game one because that's the story that I choose, or the angle that I choose to discuss. And every comeback, there's going to be a team that makes the comeback, and there's going to be a team that gives up the loss. So in this situation, Montreal, you can talk about the things that Winnipeg did to allow this to happen. I prefer to go to the side of this team and forget about the X's nose of it and the plays VA was able to make. I mean, we talked to Veer Posey and Eugene Lewis, the receiving core, obviously Wenicke with the big touchdown at the end of the game. But just the belief that this team has, what I noticed, and there's a lot, words can't ever describe, because guys are going to say what they're supposed to say in regards to a team's belief. But how I assess is looking at guys' body language. And when you saw this Alouettes team down, 20 points, they didn't look defeated. They didn't look like a bunch that was out of the game, although really I didn't think they had a chance to come back. But that just tells me, or it showed me, the group of guys they have, and kind of you can usually tell what kind of locker room they have by guys' body language in situations like that. And Kahari's got something special going on with these guys.
It was a game lost by Winnipeg. And it's,
you're a player.
It is. It is. It, once. Davis is raising an Alouettes cup and singing. Listen, I love the Alouettes.
You don't even know what's in here either, in this cup.
I do not.
I'm getting crunk at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Some export, perhaps. This is, once it would just be like a blip on the radar. Twice now, it's a trend. And sorry, refresh my memory. Who's the best running back in the CFL?
Andrew Harris.
Who's the best running quarterback of the quarterbacks that are starting right now in the CFL?
That's going to be either. It's got to be. You're going to say Strebler, but it's Strebler or Vernon.
Who's the quarterback who, in order to be successful, has to run the ball?
Chris Strebler.
You have a running quarterback, the best running back, a great offensive line. You're built to be able to put games away when you have a lead. And so the fact that now multiple times Winnipeg has either let teams back in two games or blown leads against what I believe is inferior competition is an issue. Because if they have the win in Toronto and the win against Montreal, you add two wins to their record, they're probably the West is probably a wrap. They're probably saying, good, we've got home field taken care of towards the end of the season, maybe in the last week or even last 2 weeks. We may even be able to sit some guys down and rest them. I think it's a lost opportunity, one, but it's more concerning in terms of if they are going to win 2-3 games in November. You have to be able to have your run game close and end games, and I was surprised that they weren't able to do it. Speaking of surprise, quickly before we go, we have a quarterback change in Toronto. James Franklin, JF3, will be your starting quarterback.
Am I supposed to care about this?
Yeah, you are.
Oh, well,
and here's why. I mean, listen, I've been campaigning for Macbeth, Bethel Thompson, to basically, even when he was putting up some fantasy numbers that I thought it was fool's gold, that he was missing in terms of reads, that he was making odd decisions, checking it down and second and long and not pushing the ball on first down. I think James Franklin is going to be the guy in the long term. You need to find out, and he needs to play now that he's healthy. I mean, Franklin didn't really have to clear a high bar. Bethel had 86 yards passing before he was benched in that game. He wasn't very good. But I say all that to say, in a very crowded quarterback room in Toronto, they like Dakota. Zach is still there trying to get healthy. The trade deadline is Wednesday, October 9th at 3:59 p.m. Eastern. Are all those quarterbacks still there after? Because to me, you could have a situation where the Argos, who it's a long shot for them to make the playoffs at this point, Montreal and or Edmonton will have to collapse and they'll have to turn it on. So could you see it as a fire sale of talent coming out
I'm just trying to see.
And it starts with the quarterbacks.
So I'm trying to see which quarterback would have value and where. That's the question. If I guess Ottawa would probably take James Franklin or Zach, maybe. I don't know. Ottawa's the only one I could think of that needs a quarterback, but what are their playoff hopes look like? So
maybe some insurance in Winnipeg? Maybe some insurance in Edmonton?
Winnipeg has two quarterbacks.
Sure. I mean, one doesn't really throw the football, but yes.
Right.
I'm just asking questions. I'm not saying either of these are better options.
I don't think, yeah, that's really it. I don't think any of these teams, and then you look at the rest of the teams, who's the backup in Sask right now? I don't even know who it is off the top of my head, but I'm sure he could pull it up. But anyway, so the answer is I don't think there's much value for those guys, to be totally honest with you. Just pulling up the quarterbacks here. But, yeah, I don't see Brian Bennett is the backup in Sask. But, yeah, no value for the quarterbacks to me, Isaac Harker as well. But, yeah, I don't see a lot of value in those quarterbacks, Deej.
Lastly, before we go, objectionable conduct. I need you to weigh in. Some issues, and sometimes they're off the field. This week they're on the field. First of all, shout out to Ricky Ray.
He
goes into the I can't say rafters, because it's this open-air stadium. It's not really rafters.
No, it is the wall. It's the wall of honor, is it not?
Yeah, but the wall's like kind of low. It's not even really high in the stadium. He is honored by the Edmonton Eskimos. That 15 gets put up there. It had a beautiful speech, but that's not the issue. The 15 goes up. My issue is that the guy on the field in Kilgore was wearing the number 15. Here's my question. As an equipment manager at a storied franchise, do you sometimes have to hold some numbers back and say, no, they're not all available around here? Because you know you have a respected player who made that number famous. You can't just give out number 2 in Montreal unless you know somebody's real. Is this an equipment manager oversight in Edmonton that you have Ricky Ray going into the rafters with the 15 and someone is taking the field, not playing to the level of Ricky Ray yet, wearing 15?
It could be. But let me give you a little history lesson in the Canadian Football League. If there's one person you don't question in this league, it's Dwayne Mandruziak.
Because?
He's a legend, and he is the equipment manager of the Edmonton Eskimos. And Dwayne Mandruziak has more power in this league than the commish. He's the man I never question. I hear what you're saying. If it was anybody else, so maybe, wait, but I would never question my guy, Dwayne Mandruziak.
Clearly, he hooked you up with some gear.
He's my guy. Okay. My guy.
So, yes. You're not unbiased.
No. Congrats. Jokes aside, much love to Dwayne. Great guy. And been around the league. It's an awful long time. A great ambassador. Also, Ricky, to add to what you say, congrats to Ricky. And it was really nice to see the raw emotion of Ricky Ray, because he's not an emotional guy at all. Mm-mm. And it all came pouring out, and good for him. It was. I cry at the movies. I cry. I think I cry when the Raptors won, and I'm not even like a diehard fan. I cry basically twice a week. Ricky probably hasn't cried since he scraped his knee when he fell off his bike when he was sick. So it was nice to see that emotion come out in a guy that just shows you how much it meant to him. So it was nice.
Yeah, it was one of the games of the weekend. Edmonton was down 21, scored 24 straight to tie the game. Another questionable hit by Simone Lawrence, which we'll let slide. We won't talk about yet again. Here's the last thing, and it's actually with Hamilton. It's on that defense. And it's also with fashion. Jamal Rule. I don't know if you saw this.
I didn't.
He was wearing a hoodie underneath his pads. So you could see the hoodie, you know, in between the shoulder pad and the helmet. Last I checked, the summer just ended. Like, last week was the official last day of the summer. and it was actually pretty warm in most of the country. It is now the fall. We're not even close to the winter, one, but two, even still, wearing a hoodie, wearing the team issue hoodie.
I have seen guys with this.
Maybe in practice, okay. But in a game?
I think I've seen it in the game too.
And you're okay
with
this?
They're not hoodie material. There's something else, because I've seen a lot of guys wearing them. They're football. I've seen a lot of guys wearing these.
Davis, it had a hood. I don't care what the material is. It's still a hoodie. Like, you're not wearing that hood on top of your helmet or under your helmet.
What's the point of the hood?
Exactly. So if it was that cold, you'd have the balaclava, the ski mask,
just,
if you will.
It's just swaggy.
So you like that stuff?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay, I was about to say.
No.
All right. I think we've.
Hey DJ.
Clarified some things.
Hey DJ.
Yeah.
Let's kick rocks.
All right. Thank you for listening.